Okay, so let's say you just got the newest phone, sleek, shiny, the whole deal. You carefully unbox it, and boom, the screen is cracked. Or maybe the case is warped. What a letdown, right? We've all been there. But did you ever stop to think about how something like that even happens?
It's easy to blame the brand, but the truth is, these kinds of flaws often come down to the manufacturing process, specifically something called injection molding.
Injection molding. Isn't that how they make like everything plastic?
Pretty much. We're talking toys, electronics, car parts, you name it. And today we're taking you on a deep dive into the secrets of this process, especially how choosing the right injection molding machine and understanding how it preps the materials can be the difference between a flawless product and a total flop.
Right, so this isn't just about picking any old machine. There's a real art to this, huh?
Absolutely. And one of the most crucial but often overlooked aspects is dehumidification and drying. You wouldn't believe how much moisture those little plastic pellets can soak up. And if it's not removed properly.
You get a cracked phone screen.
Exactly. Think of it like this. You're baking a cake, but instead of flour, you use soggy, damp ingredients. What happens? You get a dense, crumbly mess. Same goes for plastics. Moisture can cause bubbles warping, make the material brittle, a recipe for disaster.
So how do they get those pellets bone dry?
Well, high-tech dehumidifying systems come into play here. We're talking about a system so advanced they can get moisture levels below 0.1%. That's like squeezing every single drop of water out of a sponge. And this level of precision is crucial, especially for materials like nylon or polycarbonate, which are notoriously thirsty for moisture.
0.1%. That's mind-blowing. So basically, proper drying is like setting the foundation for a strong, flawless product.
Exactly. And it's something most people don't even realize goes into making the products they use every day. It really highlights the level of precision and expertise involved in injection molding.
Okay, so moisture's out. Now we've got this perfectly dry material. What happens next?
This is where the magic really starts, with something called screw design. You might not think a simple screw could be so impactful, but trust me, this is where things get fascinating.
A screw.
Yeah.
Seriously, I'm intrigued. Break it down for me.
Think about it like this. The screw is responsible for melting and mixing the plastic granules before they're injected into the mold. It's like a chef's whisk, ensuring all the ingredients are perfectly blended. And just like there are different whisks for different tasks, there are different types of screws designed for specific materials and purposes.
Okay, so not all screws are created equal. What kind of screw chef are we talking about here?
Well, for example, you have barrier screws, which are amazing at creating a distinct separation between the solid plastic and the melted stuff. This ensures a smooth, consistent melt, preventing unmelted granules from messing things up. Imagine making a smoothie but ending up with chunks of fruit. Not exactly what you want.
Right, so it's like separating the raw ingredients from the finished product until the perfect moment. What other types of screws are out there?
Let's say you're working with a material that's super sensitive to moisture, like those used in high-performance sporting goods. That's where venting screws come in. They have a special vent that lets any trapped moisture escape during the melting process, like a pressure valve.
Interesting. It's like giving the material a chance to breathe and release any unwanted moisture. So we've got barrier screws for even melting and vented screws for those moisture-sensitive materials. What else?
There are also mixing screws, which are designed to well mix. They have special features that create more shear and distributive mixing, ensuring things like colorants or additives are perfectly blended throughout the material. Think of it like a really good salad dressing. You want the flavors evenly distributed, not all clumped together.
Ah, so that's why some plastics have that consistent color throughout. It's all thanks to these mixing screws.
Exactly. And the choice of which screw to use is a big deal. It all comes down to the specific material, the product's requirements, and the desired outcome. It's like having a specialized toolbox for creating the perfect plastic masterpiece.
Okay, so screw design is a lot more complex than I imagined. It's not just about melting the plastic, it's about prepping it in a way that sets the stage for the entire molding process.
Precisely. And another key factor in that prep stage is something called compression ratio. It might sound technical, but it's actually a pretty simple concept.
Okay, I'm all ears. What's compression ratio all about?
Imagine you're making a snowball. You need to apply just the right amount of pressure to pack the snow tightly together right. Too much force and it crumbles. Too little and it's loose and falls apart. Compression ratio is similar. It's about how much the screw compresses the plastic granules as they move through the barrel.
So it's like finding that sweet spot between too much squeezing and not enough.
Exactly. Too much compression can generate excessive heat, which can actually degrade the plastic. It's like overcooking a delicate piece of fish. You end up with a dry, rubbery mess.
And I'm guessing too little compression isn't ideal either.
You got it. If the compression is too low, the plastic might not melt evenly or mix properly, leading to inconsistencies in the final product. It's like trying to bake a cake with pockets of dry flour. Not a recipe for success.
So compression ratio is all about finding that Goldilocks zone. Not too much, not too little, just the right amount of squeeze to melt and mix the plastic perfectly.
Exactly. And getting this right is crucial for achieving the desired melt quality and ensuring a smooth, consistent flow into the mold.
This is fascinating. I'm starting to see how each step in this process builds upon the previous one. We've gone from dehumidifying those tiny pellets to carefully selecting the right screw and fine-tuning the compression ratio. What comes next in this plastic prep journey?
Well, now that we've got our perfectly melted and mixed plastic, we need to make sure it stays at the perfect temperature throughout the process. That's where barrel temperature control comes in.
Okay, temperature control. I get why that's important for melting the plastic, but why does it matter after that?
Think of it like this. You're working with molten chocolate. If it gets too cold, it starts to solidify and becomes difficult to work with. Too hot, and it can burn and become unusable. The same principle applies to molten plastic.
So it's about maintaining that perfect consistency throughout the process.
Precisely. And maintaining a consistent temperature isn't just about quality. It also has a huge impact on efficiency and ultimately your bottom line. Fluctuating temperatures can slow down production, leading to wasted time and resources. It's like trying to drive a car with a sputtering engine. You're not going to get very far very fast.
You're absolutely right. It's like trying to cook a perfect steak. You wouldn't just throw it on the grill and hope for the best.
Yeah.
You need precise temperature control to ensure it's cooked evenly and to your liking.
Okay. I'm with you on the steak analogy. So how do they actually control the temperature so precisely in these massive injection molding machines? Well, it all comes down to sophisticated temperature control systems. Imagine a network of sensors constantly monitoring the temperature at various points along the barrel, kind of like having a team of tiny thermometers working around the clock.
So they have these sensors keeping tabs on the temperature, but how do they actually adjust it if things start to get too hot or too cold?
That's where the heating elements come in. These are strategically placed along the barrel and are controlled by the temperature control system. Think of it like having tiny heating pads that can be individually adjusted to maintain a precise temperature profile.
So it's like a high-tech oven with multiple heating zones, each one carefully calibrated to ensure the plastic is heated evenly and consistently.
Exactly. And the precision we're talking about here is incredible. Some systems can maintain the temperature within a range of plus or minus 1 degree Celsius. That's like having a thermostat that can detect the slightest fluctuation in temperature and adjust accordingly.
Wow, that's impressive. I never realized how much precision went into this aspect of injection molding. So we've got our plastic perfectly dried, melted, mixed, and now it's at the perfect temperature. What happens next? Is it finally time to inject it into the mold?
Almost. But before we get to the actual injection, there's one more crucial aspect of material preparation we need to talk about, and that's back pressure.
Back pressure? What's that all about? I'm not familiar with that term.
Think of it this way. You're trying to fill a water balloon. If you just let the water flow in freely, it might fill unevenly, or you might get air pockets. But if you apply a little bit of pressure at the opening, it forces the water to fill the balloon more evenly and completely.
Ah, so back pressure is like creating resistance to ensure the plastic fills the mold properly.
Exactly. It's about controlling the flow of molten plastic as it enters the mold cavity. And just like with everything else in injection molding, there's a sweet spot when it comes to back pressure.
Okay, so walk me through it. What happens if the back pressure is too high?
If the back pressure is too high, it can actually cause the screw to overheat, which, as we discussed earlier, can degrade the plastic. It's like pushing too hard when you're trying to squeeze toothpaste out of a tube. You might end up with a mess.
And what if the back pressure is too low?
If the back pressure is too low, you might not get enough mixing or melting of the plastic granules, leading to inconsistencies in the final product. It's like trying to stir a thick batter with a weak spoon. You'll end up with lumps.
So it's all about finding that perfect balance, just like with compression ratio and temperature control.
You got it. Injection molding is all about precision and control. Every parameter needs to be carefully adjusted to ensure a high-quality final product.
Well, you've definitely opened my eyes to the complexity of this process. It's amazing how much thought and engineering goes into something that seems so simple on the surface.
It's true. Injection molding is a hidden world of precision and innovation. And now that we've covered the essential aspects of material preparation, we can finally move on to the exciting part, the actual injection process.
Okay, I've been waiting for this, so let's talk injection. What exactly happens when that molten plastic finally meets the mold?
Well, imagine a powerful surge of molten plastic being forced into the mold cavity with incredible speed and precision. It's like a carefully choreographed dance between pressure, speed, and material flow.
It sounds intense. So break it down for me. What are the key factors that determine how the plastic fills the mold?
The two primary factors are injection pressure and injection speed. Think of it like this. You're watering your garden with a hose. The water pressure determines how forcefully the water comes out of the nozzle, and the flow rate determines how much water comes out over a given period.
Okay, that's a helpful analogy. So injection pressure is like the force behind the molten plastic, and injection speed is how quickly it flows into the mold.
You got it. And just like with your garden hose, both pressure and speed need to be carefully controlled to get the desired result.
So let's start with injection pressure. Why is it so important?
Injection pressure plays a critical role in ensuring the mold cavity is completely filled and that the plastic flows into all the intricate details of the mold. Think of it like filling a cake pan with batter. You need enough pressure to ensure the batter reaches every nook and cranny. Otherwise, you'll end up with gaps and holes.
Okay, so enough pressure to fill the mold completely. But what happens if there's too much pressure?
If the injection pressure is too high, it can cause all sorts of problems. It can damage the mold itself, deform the part, or even cause excess plastic to squeeze out of the mold, creating what's known as flash. Think of it like overinflating a tire. Too much pressure and it could burst.
And what about too little pressure? What kind of problems does that cause?
If the injection pressure is too low, you might not get complete filling of the mold cavity, which can result in weak spots or incomplete parts. It's like trying to inflate a balloon but not putting enough air in. It'll be floppy and won't hold its shape.
So it sounds like finding the right injection pressure is a delicate balancing act.
Absolutely. It's about finding that sweet spot where the pressure is high enough to fill the mold completely, but not so high that it causes damage or defects.
Okay, they've talked about injection pressure. Now let's dive into injection speed. What's the impact of that on the molding process?
Injection speed is all about how quickly the molten plastic is injected into the mold. Think of it like pouring batter into a cake pan. If you pour it too quickly, it might splash and create air bubbles. Pour it too slowly, and it might not spread evenly before it starts to set.
So it's about finding that perfect pouring speed to get a smooth, even result. What are the consequences of getting the injection speed wrong?
If the injection speed is too high, it can cause a phenomenon called jetting. This is where the plastic enters the mold so quickly that it doesn't have time to spread evenly, resulting in a streaky or uneven surface finish. It's like trying to write with a pen that's leaking ink. You get blotches and smudges instead of a clean, crisp line.
So jetting is like a plastic speed bump, creating an uneven surface finish. And what happens if the injection speed is too slow?
If the injection speed is too slow, the plastic might start to solidify before it completely fills the mold, resulting in incomplete parts or what are called short shots. It's like trying to fill a bathtub with a dripping faucet. It might take forever, and you might not even fill it completely.
Okay, so we need to find that sweet spot for injection speed, just like with pressure. But how do they actually determine the right pressure and speed for each specific product? It seems like there's so many variables to consider.
You're absolutely right. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation. There are numerous factors to consider, including the type of plastic being used, the complexity of the mold, the desired surface finish, and even the environmental conditions. Injection molding engineers use their expertise, along with computer simulations and real-world testing, to determine the optimal parameters for each specific product.
It sounds like a combination of science engineering and a little bit of art.
Exactly. It's a delicate balance of understanding the material properties, the mold design, and the capabilities of the injection molding machine.
This has been incredibly insightful. I'm starting to see how every detail from the initial drying of the plastic pellets to the precise control of injection pressure and speed plays a crucial role in creating a high-quality final product.
It's all about understanding the interconnectedness of the entire process. Each step builds upon the previous one, and any variation, however small, can have a ripple effect on the final outcome.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground so far, from dehumidification and screw design to back pressure and injection parameters. It's clear that injection molding is a far more complex process than most people realize. But before we wrap up this deep dive, there's one more crucial element we need to discuss: cooling time.
Cooling time is a critical yet often overlooked aspect of the injection molding process. It's the final stage of the journey where the molten plastic transforms from a liquid state to a solid, finished product.
Okay, so the classic has been injected into the mold, it's taken shape. Now it just needs to cool down and solidify. What's so complicated about that?
Yeah, well, it might seem straightforward, but cooling time is more than just waiting for the plastic to harden. It's a carefully controlled process that plays a crucial role in determining the final properties of the product.
Interesting. So walk me through it. Why is cooling time so important?
The rate at which the plastic cools directly impacts its molecular structure and ultimately affects its strength, flexibility, and dimensional stability. Think of it like cooling a cake after it's been baked. If you cool it too quickly, it might crack or become crumbly. Cool it too slowly, and it might not set properly.
Ah, I see your point. So just like with baking, there's an ideal cooling rate for plastic to ensure optimal properties.
Precisely. And finding that ideal rate depends on several factors, including the type of plastic, the thickness of the part, and the desired final characteristics.
Okay, so let's break it down. What happens if the plastic cools too quickly?
If the cooling is too rapid, it can create internal stresses within the part, making it more prone to warping or cracking over time. Think of it like plunging a hot glass into ice water. The sudden temperature change can cause the glass to shatter.
That makes sense. And what about cooling too slowly? What kind of issues does that create?
If the cooling process is too slow, it can lead to problems like sink marks, where the surface of the part sinks inward as the plastic shrinks during cooling. Imagine a chocolate bar that wasn't cooled properly. You might end up with unsightly depressions on the surface.
Okay, so we need to avoid both extremes, too fast and too slow. How do they achieve that perfect cooling rate in injection molding?
Well, there are various methods for controlling cooling time. One common technique is to circulate a cooling fluid, typically water, through channels within the mold itself. This helps to draw heat away from the plastic at a controlled rate. Think of it like having a network of tiny water pipes running through the mold, acting like a miniature cooling system.
So they essentially have built-in air conditioning for the mold.
Exactly. And the temperature of the cooling fluid can be precisely adjusted to achieve the desired cooling rate.
It's amazing how much thought and engineering goes into every aspect of this process. I never would have guessed that something as seemingly simple as cooling time could have such a significant impact on the final product.
It's true. Injection molding is a testament to the power of precision and control. Every parameter, from the temperature of the molten plastic to the cooling rate of the mold, plays a crucial role in determining the quality and functionality of the final product.
Well, this deep dive has certainly been eye-opening. I'm starting to see plastic products in a whole new light. Knowing the intricate journey they take from tiny pellets to finished forms.
I'm glad to hear it. And remember, what we've covered today is just a glimpse into the fascinating world of injection molding. There's so much more to explore and discover about this versatile and innovative manufacturing process.
Okay, so we've talked about how the molten plastic is prepped, injected, and cooled. What happens next? Is the part just magically popped out of the mold, ready to go?
Not quite. There's one more crucial stage in the injection molding process, ejection. It's the grand finale, where the newly formed part is carefully released from the mold, ready to begin its life as a functional product.
Okay, so ejection. What's the big deal with getting the part out of the mold? Can't they just, you know, pop it out?
It's not as simple as it might seem. Ejection needs to be done with precision and care to avoid damaging the part or the mold itself. Think of it like removing a delicate cake from a baking pan. You need to be gentle to prevent it from breaking or sticking.
Okay, I can see how that could be tricky, especially with complex shapes or delicate parts. So how do they actually get the part out of the mold without causing any damage?
Most injection molding machines have a built-in ejection system that uses ejector pins to gently push the part out of the mold cavity. Imagine a series of tiny pistons strategically placed within the mold, ready to push the part free once it's cooled and solidified.
So it's like a miniature robotic arm gently lifting the part out of the mold.
That's a great analogy. And just like with every other parameter in injection molding, the force and timing of the ejection process need to be carefully calibrated to ensure a clean and damage-free release.
Okay, so what happens if the ejection force is too high?
If the ejection force is excessive, it can deform the part, create stress marks, or even cause it to break. It's like trying to pry a stubborn lid off a jar with too much force. You might end up bending the lid or breaking the jar.
And what if the ejection force is too low?
If the ejection force is insufficient, the part might stick to the mold, making it difficult to remove. It's like trying to peel a sticker that's been stuck on for too long. It might tear or leave residue behind.
So it's all about finding that Goldilocks zone once again. Not too much force, not too little, just the right amount to release the part safely and cleanly. What determines the right ejection force?
The optimal ejection force depends on a number of factors, including the geometry of the part, the type of plastic, the surface finish of the mold, and even the temperature. Injection molding engineers take all these factors into consideration when designing the mold and setting the ejection parameters.
It's amazing how much thought and precision goes into every stage of this process. It really makes you appreciate the expertise and craftsmanship behind even the simplest plastic products.
Absolutely. Injection molding is a testament to human ingenuity and our ability to transform raw materials into complex and functional objects. And while we've covered the key steps in this deep dive from material preparation to ejection, there's still so much more to explore and learn about this fascinating field.
This has been an incredibly insightful journey. I feel like I've gained a whole new level of appreciation for the science, engineering, and artistry that goes into creating the plastic products we use every day.
And that's the beauty of knowledge. It allows us to see the world in a new light and appreciate the hidden complexities that often go unnoticed.
Well, on that note, I think it's time for us to wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. But before we go, I want to leave you with a thought-provoking question. Now that you understand the intricacies of injection molding, think about the last time you bought a product that broke way too soon. Maybe it was a flimsy plastic toy or a cracked phone case. Could it be that the manufacturer cut corners during the injection molding process, prioritizing speed over quality?
That's an excellent point. Consumers often bear the brunt of shortcuts taken during manufacturing. Imagine a company rushing the cooling time to churn out products faster. You might end up with a product that looks fine at first glance, but develops cracks or warps down the line.
It's like the old saying, haste makes waste. But in this case, the waste could mean compromised quality and durability.
Exactly. And this raises an interesting ethical dilemma. Should manufacturers be held accountable for ensuring their products are not only functional but also durable? Where's the line between cost-effectiveness and responsible manufacturing?
That's something to ponder, for sure. It's easy to get caught up in the excitement of new gadgets and products. But it's important to be mindful of the processes behind them and the potential consequences of cutting corners.
Absolutely. Informed consumers can drive demand for better quality and more sustainable practices. So the next time you're shopping for a plastic product, take a moment to consider its construction. Are there any visible flaws? Does it feel sturdy? You might even do a little research on the manufacturer's reputation for quality.
It's like becoming a plastic detective, using your newfound knowledge to decipher the clues left behind by the injection molding process.
I love that analogy. And remember, knowledge is power. The more we understand about the things we use every day, the better equipped we are to make informed choices that support both quality and ethical practices.
This deep dive into injection molding has been truly fascinating. We've gone from demystifying the process to uncovering its hidden complexities and even pondering its ethical implications. It's amazing how something that seems so commonplace can hold so much depth.
It's a reminder that even the most mundane objects have a story to tell. A journey from raw material to finished form that's shaped by human ingenuity, scientific precision, and a delicate balance of art and engineering.
Well said. And on that note, it's time for us to wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. We hope you've enjoyed this exploration of injection molding and that you'll never look at a plastic product the same way again.
Remember, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep into the world around you. You never know what fascinating discoveries await